we're going on to the last case of the day, 11-2658, United States versus Freeman, and it's Mr. Massio Pinto?
Yes, Your Honor.
And yet another way to hide drugs.
Yeah. Yes. Good morning. May it please the court, counsel, Anthony Mashapin on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Freeman. There are three issues on appeal, two of which arose from Mr. Freeman's pro se self-styled motion to dismiss, which his appointed counsel adopted, and the court provided a hearing for and considered a motion to suppress. The third issue is the sentencing issue, in which the district court essentially provided a life sentence or near-life sentence in the sense that it's 30 years for Mr. Freeman. The primary issue that we addressed on appeal is the probable cause issue. Probable cause for a warrantless arrest requires heightened, particularized suspicion. Our brief focuses primarily, although not exclusively, on this notion of particularized suspicion. In other words, whether there was real evidence at the time of the arrest that Mr. Freeman, as opposed to someone else in particular, had committed a crime of attempted narcotics transaction.
Well, we have six factors, don't we?
There are six pieces of evidence, Your Honor. You are correct. And I would suggest to Your Honors that all of those six factors, when analyzed, do not rise to the level of particularized heightened suspicion that Mr. Freeman, as opposed to Mr. Garner or some other person, was the other person on the phone, essentially, on July 28th.
Who has the raspy voice?
Well, no one knows, Your Honor. There was no identification by the confidential witness as to whom he was speaking with on July 28th or any time thereafter, really, up until, I believe, the trial.
But we know that a drug deal is arranged with a person with a raspy voice.
Okay, and that is absolutely correct. And the raspy voice is known when Mr. Freeman steps out of the car and Officer Barr says that he had a raspy voice, but they do not bring anybody to the scene to say, is this the voice that you heard on the telephone? Or bring one of the officers to the scene and say, is this the voice that was on the other phone?
But they call the phone.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. And I'll absolutely get to the phone in a second, Your Honor, but what I want to finish on the raspy voice issue is the testimony is clear that the confidential witness, Mr. Carter, didn't know who the raspy voice even belonged to. He thought it could have been Banks, because that was Banks' phone.
But for probable cause,
yes, sir.
You don't need to prove that it's the voice, do you? I mean, the fact that it is a voice is part of the equation.
Your Honor, I agree with you, but it has to be particularized evidence related to this defendant. And I guess my point is there was testimony that even the confidential witness thought it was Banks disguising his voice. Banks is Garner. So the testimony really is I don't think it favors any particular side. I think this confidential witness thought it was Banks disguising his voice. Banks comes out of the car, uses his real voice. Freeman has a raspy voice, but there's no tie-up.
Well, it's not necessarily an either-or choice that the police have to make. Two people in the car shows up where the drug deal is supposed to take place, the phones in the car, and so forth, drug deals often involve more than just a single individual.
I agree with that, Your Honor, but if you take the six pieces of evidence, one is the minivan showing up at the scene of the location where it appears that the deal was arranged, and that's admitted.
But nobody goes into the store from there?
Absolutely right.
It's pretty suspicious.
What I would say about that piece of evidence, the minivan, two occupants, is, you know, Freeman is an occupant. He's not the driver. So if we look at the minivan showing up in and of itself, A, he's not the driver. B, he's not the owner of the van. So the evidence seems to suggest more that it's more, I mean, at least neutral on that point. It's probably more geared towards Garner, the driver, being the one who has the particularized evidence of a crime being arranged. So then you have the there are other pieces of evidence, and I do want to get to the phone ringing in the location, and I'm happy to do that now. But before I do that, I would say the dog hit. The canine hits on the exterior of the van. And what I would say about that is the same thing I've said before, which is in terms of particularized evidence towards Freeman or towards Garner or someone else, Freeman's outside the van a far distance away. The record's clear about that. The dog hits on the exterior rear of the van, so it's not the passenger side. It's more the driver's side, which would arguably suggest it's the driver. And Freeman doesn't own the van, and the police know that at the time. So, again, I would say the canine hit is neutral or gears more towards Garner. As an aside, Garner's never prosecuted for this offense. I mean, he's cut loose after the arrest because, presumably, there's no probable cause. Ultimately, the government concludes that Garner
is not concealing crack cocaine.
Well, but it goes to your point that two people yes, Your Honor, but it goes to your point that two people arrive at the scene. Both parties there could be probable cause that both parties are involved in the drug deal. My point is Garner's cut loose. He's never prosecuted, so
that doesn't mean there wasn't probable cause.
Well, it does mean the government decided not to prosecute
him.
You're right.
What kind of case can you make beyond a reasonable doubt?
Right.
Or maybe he told them something that helped them with something else.
All
who
right.
knows?
What I would really say matter. About the phone ringing, in the alleged location that Officer Bear says it's ringing, is what I said in the brief about Officer Bear's testimony and her credibility. And I don't lightly make the proposition that her testimony is so improbable and so inconsistent that no reasonable fact finder could believe it, because the implication is that she's not telling the truth. But I think the standard applies in this case, respectfully. There are three things identified in the brief. I want to focus on the last one. She claims that in July of 2008, she knows all this incriminating evidence about Tyrone Freeman through a confidential witness that she interviewed 2 months earlier, none of which is documented. But she says he is a drug dealer. He drives in a minivan with an individual called Worm. The minivan is owned by someone else. He has diabetes. He has a rotting leg. And he's been known to do drug runs 4 or 5 times, and he hides drugs in his buttocks when he's pulled over by the police. She says...
Wait, no. We call that an intermediate intergluteal.
Okay.
In this court.
I'll try to remember that phrase, Your Honor. I'm not sure I can pull it off. So she knows all this great evidence that she says at the suppression hearing. But that is entirely incredible, in my view, respectfully, because she admits at the suppression hearing that she was going to cut loose Freeman. That they believe they had to unarrest him, they had to call the state's attorney's office to get advice. And what I would propose is that the trial court clearly erred by crediting all of her testimony, because that testimony is so inconsistent and improbable, no police officer would have released him or thought of releasing him under those facts. What the reasonable police officer would have done was go, I know where the drugs are. They're in his buttocks, because I have all the pieces to the puzzle. There's no drugs on the scene. There's no drugs in the car. We pursued the car for 2 blocks. Where else could it be? So the point is, her admission that they were going to cut loose Mr. Freeman is, I suggest, proof that she was incredible, that she was making up the testimony about the confidential witness number 2 and all the intelligence she had. And if you deem her testimony to fail under that heightened standard, and I acknowledge it's a heightened standard, then the location of the ringing phone is not in the passenger compartment. It's just in the van, which is documented in the report. It's one of the few things that is documented. And then we have the Garner versus, we don't have the particularized probable cause leading to Freeman, because all you have is Garner and Freeman, Garner's the driver, Garner's phone. And for those reasons, we would ask that the court reverse the district court and incorporate all the arguments in my brief as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Hertzler.
Good morning again.
Good morning.
One of the arguments earlier today, I believe it was Mr. Carlin, referred to credibility as the third rail that this court should never touch. I don't know if the case law supports that, but I thought it was a terrific expression, and I would urge the court to employ the same standard here. I mean, it doesn't strike me as appropriate that this court is going to second-guess the magistrate judge that heard Officer Bear and the other officers and concluded that they were credible and found probable cause. So if this case comes down to a credibility contest, then I would suggest that this court not touch that third rail and affirm on the probable cause finding based on the officer's credible testimony.
If I could just clarify the chronology here, we've got essentially a pretextual traffic stop in this case.
That's
ordered
correct.
By the narcotics officers. So the street officer executes that traffic stop for some sort of traffic violation.
Right.
I don't remember what.
Yes.
At the request of the narcotics investigators.
That's right.
And the two occupants of the car are pulled out of the car and arrested at that point?
Yes. They were asked for identification, pulled out of the car, and then they were arrested. Yes.
For the traffic violation?
I don't think they could arrest the passenger for the traffic violation.
Right. So we are evaluating probable cause as of that moment, or as it developed with the phone and the raspy voice and et cetera after that point?
Well, no, they had the raspy voice at the time when they stopped the car, I believe. They got the raspy voice.
Okay.
Ask for identification. I mean, that.
So the corpus of evidence that we have here is that everything matched and occurred as it was supposed to occur at the time that the drug deal was supposed to happen.
Wait, I'm losing you. I'm sorry.
So, okay, I'm trying to isolate what we've got here before the narcotics arrest occurred as a chronological matter. So they show up where they're supposed to show up, at the place they're supposed to show up, in very suspicious circumstances.
Well, more than suspicious. They've had several conversations,
right.
Telephone conversations, recorded conversations. This is a drug deal going down.
Right.
It can't go down because the informant is not in the Save-A-Lot.
Right.
He's in the DEA office.
Right.
So it has to be aborted.
Right. So they wait for a while. They don't go into that. I mean, they're obviously not shoppers.
So there's probable cause to believe that these two men showed up to distribute drugs.
Right. And then in addition to that, the fact that all the facts coincide as they were supposed to occur.
Correct.
Based on how this deal was set up, we have the raspy voice at the moment of arrest. We don't have the phone. That comes later.
That's correct.
Okay. That's just
at the moment of arrest, I think, regardless of whether the raspy voice came before or after, they had probable cause to arrest these two men for an attempted drug deal.
Okay, so the dispute about the phone and what Officer Bear knew about how this guy stored his drugs, et cetera, that is relevant maybe to the strip search issue, but not to the probable cause issue.
Well, no, the probable cause, when they were taken into custody, they were taken out of the car, and we say, well, they were arrested. I don't know. Maybe they're just detained. It's clear that the traffic officers believed that they were supposed to arrest these two men. But I don't know that the record reflects when they were handcuffed, when they were put in the police cruiser. They obviously weren't placed in the police cruiser. When the dog came, they were only 5 or 6 feet away. So whether they were arrested or not, I suppose, is somewhat debatable. And the point really is that the raspy voice, the telephone call, added to the probable cause before the two were transported down to the jailhouse, the police station, and then to the jailhouse.
When of course, the magistrate judge concludes that it was lawful for Shea to arrest Freeman as soon as the minivan stopped, right?
Right. That's correct.
So is it your position the arrest happened at the stop of the minivan?
My position is that there was probable cause to arrest at the time that the minivan was stopped. There was probable cause to arrest both men at the time the minivan stopped for an attempted distribution of crack cocaine.
And does it matter that there are two of them, that the phone deal was being done by this raspy-voiced guy, and that when they show up, there are two of them?
It doesn't matter much.
Is there probable cause as to both?
I think so, sure. Yeah, they show up in a van together. But bear in mind, there's some background here. We know that Freeman travels with another man in a gray minivan. We know that from CW number 2. So the police officers come into this event with more collective information than simply the fact that there are the phone calls that day. You follow me? CW number 2, has given information to the police officers well prior to this arrest.
So why did the officers think they were stuck and had to call the assistant?
They didn't find any drugs. They found no drugs. It looked like it was going to be a no-drug case. I thought that was good police work. I hope that this court will not criticize them for calling a prosecutor to find out what they should do. They had no drugs. That's why this became sort of a where's Waldo? They figure that their drugs are someplace. You know, it's not a situation where you're looking at the where's Waldo picture and you think, well, maybe Waldo's not there. They had very good reason to believe there were drugs. They just didn't know where they were. It thoroughly searched the minivan. It searched both men. What are they going to do at that point? And as we argued a moment ago, they let Garner go ultimately anyway. He was never charged. Could well have been charged for his complicity in this event, but Freeman didn't cooperate and testify against him, so it would have been a thin prosecution. Garner wasn't prosecuted for this event. I felt like I just interrupted another. No. All right. Thank you again.
Thank you. How much? Give him 2. Don't worry.
Thank you, Your Honor, for the 2 minutes. I'd like to address the points. And you said, why did they believe they were stuck? Mr. Hartzler says, because there was no dope. They didn't find any dope. That's my point on the lack of credibility with Officer Baer. Officer Baer, if she is to believe, she knows exactly where the dope is. It's in his buttocks.
In his uh-huh.
Yeah.
And,
the other point is...
But you didn't expect them to strip search.
No, but they would have never made the call, Your Honor. That's my point.
Some prosecutors won't take no dope cases.
My point is she knows exactly where it is. She has probable cause to know where it is. She would have immediately taken him to the station and done the strip search. The fact that she didn't do that is damning, in my view, to the credibility of her testimony. You said, does the number of occupants matter? I would suggest it does. What if there's 5 people in that minivan? They don't know how many people are in that minivan. What if there's 3 passengers, a car seat with a baby in it, and they don't even know the gender of the occupants when they arrest the person? I would say 5 occupants it makes a difference. You have to have some particularized probable cause. I would say the driver maybe reaches it because he's the one calling the shots about where to go. I would say the rest of the occupants, you need more than mere presence at the crime or believed crime. The chronology, Your Honor, this is how it went down. The government took the position that there was probable cause at the time of the traffic stop. The officer who made the stop said that the detectives said, arrest him right away. So at that point, the magistrate made a conclusion that there were 2 factors supporting probable cause at the time of the traffic stop, the calls with an unknown person and the minivan showing up at the scene. The court then went on to say, even if there wasn't probable cause at the time of the stop to arrest him immediately, as the stop progressed, the additional 4 pieces of evidence came into play very quickly without a violation of the Constitution, and then he made the alternative conclusion that there was probable cause shortly thereafter. With respect to the third rail comment, Your Honor, I would just say this. The lawyer was very careful. He said if it's he said, she said, or he said, that's the third rail credibility. Here, that isn't the case. What I'm suggesting is Officer Baer's admission about what she did that night renders that testimony inherently incredible and unworthy of belief. Thank you, Your Honor.
And you have, and your law firm have, also argued thanks for taking on this job and for doing such a great job for your client. And Mr. Hartzler, you always have our thanks. So have a good trip home. In Springfield?
I drove up yesterday, and the temperature dropped 30 degrees and 30 miles.
Of course. You arrived, and
it brings a chill.
I bring
a chill into the room.
She's getting you back from that earlier comment. Let's see. I have to say something. I have to say this court will be in recess until tomorrow morning at 9:30. But it won't be as much fun. Bye-bye. Okay. All right.